I'm Jeff Watts, and welcome to Optometric Quarterly 87. In this edition of OQ, we have interviews on epiretinal membrane, the ocular side effects of tamoxifen, and the second age-related eye disease study, otherwise known as ARIDS 2. In the quarterly review, Jeff Robison looks at papers on the personal and societal burdens of uncorrected vision and other sight loss. For current and past editions of Optometric Quarterly, visit the Docket website at www.docket.info on your computer, tablet, or smartphone. Optometric Quarterly can be downloaded as a podcast from the iTunes Store or direct to your iPhone or iPad using the free Docket OQ app from the App Store. And why not send us your feedback on the program by emailing inquiries at docket.info? Alternatively, use the OQ app or website to complete our survey. Our first item is on epiretinal membrane, a topic suggested by listener Chris Edwards. Stephen Charles is a vitreoretinal surgeon at the Manchester Royal Eye Hospital and regularly sees patients with epiretinal membrane. Here he talks to Ian Warwick about the condition and its treatment.
What exactly is an epiretinal membrane and how does it develop?
Epiretinal membranes are seen in patients usually over the age of 60, and it's due to a thin layer of cells which is growing on the inner surface of the retina on the ILM, the inner limiting membrane. And this can be a very thin membrane, which we would call a cellophane membrane. That's what it looks like. It's like a bit of cling film or cellophane on the surface of the retina. And it may not cause any distortion of the retina itself. Over time, by contraction of the membrane, then it may distort the retinal surface. And so you may see sort of wrinkling of the inner surface of the retina. This may, again, if it's just evolving the inner surface of the retina, may not involve the outer surface, the photoreceptor layer. And then over time, if the membrane contracts further, if there's more cells in this membrane with contraction, then you can see distortion of the retinal blood vessels and the patient gets distortion. So the major symptoms are distortion, so straight lines will appear to be curved, overall blurring of vision, or macropsia, so things may appear to be larger. Although patients, of course, may be entirely asymptomatic, and so when the optometrist sees the patient, they may not have noticed anything at all, and it may be something you pick up if you're testing with an Amsler chart. But so there's a whole spectrum of patients being asymptomatic to being significantly visually impaired from the membrane.
So there's nothing particularly specific that an epiretinal membrane patient would present to with an optometrist other than this distortion?
Yeah, it's really distortion. And I think particularly so macropsia rather than micropsia. So macropsia is very much associated with ERM formation.
And if there is a suspicion of an ERM on behalf of the optometrist, what examinations should the optometrist perform to confirm a diagnosis?
Well, as part of the overall examination, the Amsler testing, using the Amsler chart, is very useful. And also, clearly, careful biomicroscopy. So looking at the surface of the retina, looking for inner retinal wrinkling, looking for distortion of blood vessels. So particularly if you follow the route of blood vessels, if they appear to be absolutely straight and normal, well, probably there's very little in the way of distortion of the retina itself. But clearly if there is distortion, then that's going to suggest that the retina is distorted and you know, we may be able to gain something from removal of the retina. From the point of view of further tests, then the OCT, optical coherence tomography, is extremely useful. And really, that's the next stage in the assessment of a patient.
And is there anything that would differentiate the sort of change you get on an Amsler between wet macular degeneration or bad drusenoid macular degeneration and an ERM? Is there anything specific we should look for there?
Well, I think that's very difficult, really. I mean, it is clearly quite a subjective test. So I think with an AMD, with drusen, you know, you may have little repeated elevations of a line, but I think it's very difficult to say those symptoms relate to wet AMD and those at epiretinal membrane. I think basically you have distortion, you know you've got a maculopathy, and then we've got to work out what the cause of that distortion is and what we can do about it.
if we're going to refer in for the ERM, what sort of urgency is there about the referral?
There's really no urgency. I mean, the patients will be seen as a routine referral. I know sometimes we get in, you know, referrals from GPs or optometrists saying patient to be seen within 2 weeks, and actually I think for most hospitalised service units they wouldn't be able to provide that sort of urgency. This is non-urgent. When the patient is seen, and if we do decide to perform surgery, it would be done as a routine case on a routine waiting list. So basically there is no urgency.
And if the optom is fortunate enough to have an LCT to monitor with, would that vary on when referral inward should be given?
I think the key thing is how symptomatic the patient is. And we must not really think about treating the OCT, but we must remember we're treating the patient. And I think with the advent of OCT, it's amazing what pathology is picked up in patients that are otherwise asymptomatic. So I think as OCT machines are more commonly available within optometry practices, then clearly there's pathology that's going to be picked up in patients that otherwise we would never realise that they had an underlying problem, albeit early. So it really depends on the symptomatology. And if you have a patient that has 6-6 vision or 6-9 vision that is essentially asymptomatic, then we're not really going to be considering treatment, and therefore really onwards referral is not required. And the patient can be monitored with sort of serial OCTs. And one has to remember that actually the majority of patients can have quite a stable membrane. It's only about 10 or 15% of patients that do have progressive deterioration of their parietal membrane. The majority may stay stable. So after discussion with your patient, if they're very little in the way of symptoms or if they're asymptomatic and they have good vision, then I think it's quite appropriate for the optometrist to continue to monitor them in their own practice. After discussion with the patient, you know, because the OCT is such a wonderful bit of technology that it just gives you the diagnosis there in quite a straightforward way. You sort of know what it is. And I think, so if after discussion with the patient, you're happy with the diagnosis, they are not particularly symptomatic or they're asymptomatic and they don't want to take any further, it's quite appropriate for the patient to be followed in the optometry practice.
And if they are referred in and treatment's required, what sort of treatment are they going to experience?
So the treatment is vitrectomy, pars plana vitrectomy. Now, clearly many of these patients may also have some cataracts. So at the same time as vitrectomy, we may perform cataract surgery. From the point of view of the vitrectomy, then we're removing the vitreous. The vitreous may be attached to the optic disc. It may be attached over the macular area. So the vitreous will be separated and removed from the retina. And then the epirietal membrane is removed. Now, the epirietal membranes can be transparent, so they can be quite difficult to see. But more and more, we tend to use staining agents, tissue staining agents within surgery, particularly blue, trypan blue dyes. And we place this on the membrane for a period, wash it out, sort of rinse out the back of the eye, and then we can see these membranes stained beautifully blue, and that'll enable us to peel them. Now, the epirietal membrane sits on the ILM, the inner limiting membrane we've mentioned earlier. And actually, we're very used to peeling the ILM these days as part of macular hole surgery in quite a safe, reproducible way. So actually, most surgeons now would be peeling the epirietal membrane on the surface of the ILM, because then you're removing all the scar tissue, removing all the epirietal membrane. Sometimes when you're peeling the epirietal membrane on its own, you can leave little foci of epirietal membrane behind, which can then proliferate and give rise to recurrence. Whereas if you could remove the epirietal membrane on a underlying membrane, the ILM, then actually you remove the whole thing in one go.
Once this is done, what sort of expectation should the patient have of vision, and should optoms be beginning to sort of manage the expectation of final result?
Yeah. I think patients need to be counselled that it is likely their vision will never achieve what it was before. And broadly speaking, vision gets about halfway to normal. Now, that means to say that clearly the earlier something is operated on, the better. We don't want to wait till the membrane reduces vision to 660, because then the end result won't be as good. But there'll be a significant reduction in distortion. That's the important thing. And usually the distortion goes away significantly. It may not entirely go away, but there'll be a significant improvement.
So our patient's been referred in, they've had treatment, and an optometrist that patient then goes back to having had ERM treatment. Is there anything specific that the optometrist should be looking for?
Clearly, when patients have had an operation to remove a membrane, there is a small risk of recurrence. Now, that is actually very small if the membrane is removed on the surface of the ILM. It's probably 3% or less. So one thing to look out for is recurrence, although that is very unusual. The patient, if they've had a vitrectomy without cataract surgery, then clearly they will develop nucleosclerotic cataract over time. Most patients will have had cataract surgery within 2 years after their vitrectomy. Clearly, if someone's already had cataract surgery as part of their phaco vitrectomy, then as anyone else that's had cataract surgery, they may develop posterior capsular pacification, so that's something to look for. From the point of view, actually, development of cataract after vitrectomy, this tends to be a nucleosclerotic cataract, and it can be really quite subtle sometimes, particularly in the young patients, and they can get significant index myopia related to the nucleosclerotic cataract without much in the way of cataract being visible unless you really look for it. So they can get, say, 4 diopters of index myopia with actually not much to see, just a little bit of nucleosclerosis. So that's something to look out for, particularly in the young patient.
And if you look in and the recurrence that you mentioned, that's a possibility of the ERM, would you want that referring in if new distortion is seen? Would
Absolutely.
That have an urgency?
Absolutely,
to it?
Yeah. I mean, I think patients can be referred in. Again, this would be a routine assessment. There's no urgency to it. As a vitreoretinal surgeon, we are seeing patients with retinal detachments, macular on, macular off, and there's lots of things that really are quite urgent to sort out. So in the grand scheme of things, that's a recurrence that would be seen as a routine referral.
Thanks, Stephen and Ian.